Hello and welcome to the Browns Blitz. Today is Tuesday, October the 5th, and this is episode number 23. I'm your host, Rod Bloom, and with me tonight is Matt Norris. Matt won kind of a little contest I ran on Twitter based on the San Francisco 49ers game and came up with the best prediction of what would happen. And Matt predicted pretty closely what would happen with the hammer as far as the number of punts and some of the punts he would do. A lot of people predicted good things for the Browns, and most of those didn't come true. So Matt was the closest. So Matt's going to kind of be my co-host here tonight. So I'm glad to have him. And Matt, how has your day gone, and how are you feeling tonight?
So far, so good. I appreciate you having me on, Rod. It's maybe not exactly the prediction I wanted to win with, but you know, it happened, and nobody's real excited about what happened in the 49ers game. But we'll move on, and hopefully we can have a good time tonight. And I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I so badly wanted, you know, somebody to win who predicted, you know, Odell catching three touchdowns or Chubb running for three or Baker throwing four, but just wasn't meant to be that night. But I'm glad to have you here. And like you said, we're gonna make the most of it. We're gonna have a good time, and we're going to start off like we always do with Blitz Beverages, talking about our favorite beverage. And as everybody knows, I tend to drink beer. So I have a beer in front of me, which I've been working on for a little bit. And I have to tell you, Matt, I think I dug back in the refrigerator. I don't even know if they make this beer anymore. I was looking it up, and I don't think it's in production any longer. So I think it's been in my refrigerator for a little while. Yeah. It's a good time to kind of polish this thing off. It's called Nuts for Chocolate. It's an almond chocolate blonde by, what's the name? It's from the Netherlands. It's Jopen. So Jopen, that's how I'm going to say it. It's 7% beer. And I got to tell you, I don't really taste nuts or chocolate in this. It tastes like a blonde ale to me.
Yeah.
So maybe why this beer didn't make it too long.
Yeah. I mean, how much do you really want to taste the nuts and chocolate in your beer, though?
I'm good with a little bit of a chocolate taste.
I have had chocolate stouts that were not bad. So, you know, I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah, I like some flavor in my beer, but it depends how the whole package goes together. I don't want just a flavor in there just to make it taste different from a beer necessarily.
Yeah.
But if it goes with the texture and integrity of the beer, then I'm good with it, and I'm always open for something different. So Matt, this is your shot at your introducing your Blitz beverage. What did you bring tonight?
Well, I'm also a beer guy, so I went with the old reliable Sam Adams, the regular Boston Lager. That's kind of my go-to. You know, if I'll look around in the craft beer section, or I'll look around what we've got in our area, and if I don't see anything that really tickles my fancy, you know, I'll just go straight to Samuel Adams. You know, that's an easy choice for me. If I was choosing my favorite one, it would be Samuel Smith's Oatmeal Stout, which is an English beer, so we don't get much around here. But if you've never had it, you come upon it in a store, I think you should check it out if you like dark beers especially.
Yeah, I've grown to enjoy dark beers more and more over the last couple years trying beers on my podcasts. So my tastes have grown, and you know, I think I like a lot wider variety of beer now than I did a few years ago. So Some people, like my brother, will call me a snob, but because I do turn my nose up at a lot of beers that don't come in bottles. But you know, but that I just think life's too short to drink bad beer. So I enjoy a good beer, but I'm with you. Sam Adams is definitely a go-to. It's I think they're all good. You know, you're going to get something good when you buy a Sam Adams. I have not had that Samuel Smith, so I'll definitely keep that in mind. So those would be two of your favorites. Is there anything else you keep in your fridge?
My brother-in-law has gotten me kind of into some IPAs. When I'm not much of an IPA guy, I never was, but he's had a couple of them the last couple times I've visited, and I've actually enjoyed them. So there's a lot of IPA up here, and I'm in Minnesota, so up here a lot of the craft beer made in this area is IPA. They make a lot of them here, so you know that's if you get a Surly or something around here, it's most likely going to be some sort of IPA. So I dabble a little bit. There's actually an IPA from New Belgium that's called the Hemperer, and it's mm-hmm. actually it's a hemp infused IPA, and I really like the smell and the taste of it. Like that first smell that you get when you first crack it open is so good, and it's so strong, and I've really bought that a few times just because I really do like that. But other than that, I don't drink as much, and I'm like you. You know, if I'm gonna drink, it's gonna be something that I enjoy. You know, and I don't just get a 24 pack of something to get ripped. You know, that's not me anymore.
Right, so, that's you know, right.
Tastes good. I'll have a beer every now and then, and that's pretty much how I do it.
Yeah, I'm with you on the IPAs. I never really enjoyed them, but I'm trying them more and more, and trying to get acclimated to them, because anymore you go out someplace and you look at the beer menu, and a lot of places 2/3 of the menu is IPAs now.
Yeah, it is.
They're just very popular. So I've had some that I really like, and I have to tell you, I have not had New Belgium. Their beers are excellent. I'm a Fat Tire guy. I could drink Fat Tire. That's definitely a go-to if I just want a good beer. Fat Tire's great, but I haven't had the Hemperer yet.
Yeah, it's good. If it's the hops, the real hoppy flavor that turns you off IPAs, you may not like it. But if you can get over that real high hoppy flavor, it's a very good beer.
I've gotten to where I get used to it.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier for me now than it was a while back. So it's just not my first go to, which is probably the same way you feel. So we've extended that segment a little longer than usual, which was pretty enjoyable for me, because a lot of people come on and either aren't beer drinkers or they're drinking something else. So it's good to actually talk some beer.
Yeah, I caught the last podcast you did with the offensive lineman /fullback who was drinking Gatorade. So not a lot to say about Gatorade, but I get what he's saying. You know, that's what he has to do, right?
That's right. That's where he is in life right now. He's training and everything. So
good for him.
Completely understood his predicament. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about this game the Browns played on Sunday against the Seahawks. And I don't know about you, Matt. It was a little bit strange for me watching a game on a Sunday at 1:00 for the Browns.
Yeah, what happened there? That's well, there was so much talk about it getting flexed to Sunday night too. That you know, a couple weeks ago, they were like, "Well, will they get flexed?" And you know, they decided they squashed that pretty quickly. But you know, there was still a chance. You know, as recent as a couple weeks ago, that they maybe even move that to prime time. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sunday at 1:00 is it's 12:00 here. So Sunday at 12:00 is so hard for me to get up for games because I work night shift on weekends. So I get home at 6, so noon is just such an awful hour for me, you know.
Oh yeah, that's tough.
I have trouble going to sleep right when I get home, you know, and if I don't go right to sleep at that hour, you know, it's hard for me to wake up at noon. So, you know, I really enjoy when they have Thursday night's great for me because I'm not even at work, but Monday night's perfect, and you know, Sunday night I can work with, but.
And so the schedule's helped you a little bit this year.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. Well, at least we got the bye coming up this week, so you don't have to worry about it. But this game with Seattle, I don't even know where to start. I think after the 49ers game, which kind of caused an uproar because the Browns got spanked. You know, they went out to the West Coast, and I thought that was going to be a tough game. I didn't necessarily think the Browns were going to lose, but the 49ers game. But I knew going out to the West Coast against a good team wasn't going to be easy. So I think coming back and playing Seattle at home, I know what Russell Wilson is. He's as good as any player in the league right now. So I knew this was going to be a tough game. I figured it was going to be close, and it was close. The Browns did some really good things. They did some bad things. There was the typical officiating blunders and
bad things. Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, I don't know what's what were your biggest takeaways from this game, Matt?
Well, first off, I mean, we start off about as good as you can want. You know, you can't script a better beginning for the Browns. You know, a big long kick return, you know, takes it down, you know, almost into the red zone to begin with, and then right off the bat, you know, Nick Chubb rips off a touchdown, and you're like, this is what you want. This is if you're gonna script a Browns win this week, this is what you want. You know, you want a Chubb first or touchdown, you know, 2 minutes into the game, you're already up 7-0, you know.
So right.
That gives anybody a fighter's chance, you know, especially back at home. You know, Baker has something to prove. When he gets humbled, you know, he comes back and he wants to prove everybody wrong. And I thought this was an opportunity for him and the Browns as a whole to do that. And, boy, they got right on it, you know.
And so, yeah, the offense looked great.
Early
on, it really did. Everybody doing their parts. You know, just the special teams, just I felt good. I mean, I felt really good about the game, especially like you said after that Nick Chubb. Even after the Seahawks went down and scored, you know, I'm like, okay. They missed the extra point. The Browns come back and score again. And I'm like, all right, you know, the Browns offense came to play today.
Yeah.
The defense will figure it out. And, you know, and I don't know. The first half, when the Browns were leading 20-18 at the first half. You know, I thought, well, it could have been better because they let the Seahawks kind of in near the end of the first half. They you know, let them get back into the game, but they've still got a lead.
Yeah.
So you still feel pretty good about things.
They made them kick field goals, you know, a couple times when it could have been touchdowns. You know, we could have been behind at the half just as easily.
Yeah, I saw a lot of takes on a lot of different takes on the defense, the defensive performance in this game. And to me, I thought the defense played pretty well in this game. I really did because they were put in a tough spot a lot of times due to the turnovers.
Yeah, I think that's a theme through this game is turnovers really. You know, you eliminate one, just one of the turnovers, and we might be talking about a win this week.
Yeah, it was Browns turned the ball over four times. And if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, Seahawks didn't turn the ball over at all, did they? I don't believe. Or did they?
I've got the thing up right now. Zero interceptions, one fumble. They had a fumble.
Okay. So there was one turnover. But yeah, that's right. 4-1. But still, yeah, you turn the ball over four times. It's going to be tough to get a win, but still, Browns are right there.
Team like the Seahawks, you know, they will make you pay.
Well, yeah, you've got, they're a professional team. Russell Wilson is, you give him a shot, you let him stick around, and he's typically going to find a way to win the game. So,
yeah, how many times has anybody who's watched the Seahawks seen that? You know, you give him the ball like we did when you get down to the fourth quarter and we've got a one score lead and he's got the ball and it's just like you've seen this before. You put the ball in Russell Wilson's hands late in the game with it on the line and he will go win games.
Yeah. Yeah, but looking at the numbers, Nick Chubb, 20 carries for 122 yards, averages 6.1, which is almost a low number for him anymore. Half the time, he's averaging 7-8 yards a carry, you know, in some of these games. He scores two touchdowns. It was entertaining when Baker came back and scored on the same play. It looked like an identical play to what Russell Wilson scored on.
Yeah,
and they both
yeah.
just ran right down the middle of the field. Of course, Russell Wilson, I think, ran maybe another 5-10 yards than Baker.
Think,
but it was almost the exact same setup.
Yeah, Wilson's was like 16 and Baker's was like 11 or something like that. But, yeah, the way the middle opened up and there was the linebacker guarding a tight end with his back to the football. It opened up and he was – you can look at both plays and there's a linebacker with his back to the ball right at the goal line in the middle of the field, and that's the only chance to stop either quarterback on the play, and both of them rolled out and it looked almost almost identical. It was funny. I saw that.
Yeah, so Nick Chubb ends up with 20 carries. He's the only back with a carry,
right?
Nobody else touched the ball other than Baker. Why isn't he getting 25 or more carries?
You know, I tweeted out, I think my tweet was something like Nick Chubb having 9 carries at halftime in a game you were ahead all the way from 2 minutes into the game is criminal. And I know the Browns fan base, they, as much as we love our gadgets and OBJ and Baker and, you know, our offense goes as Nick Chubb goes if we let it, you know, and I get we don't give him 30 carries a game because we don't have the depth right now. And Dontrell Hilliard not showing up as a running back in the stat sheet tells you exactly what the coaches are thinking, is that if Nick Chubb gets hurt, we don't have anybody that we rely on behind him. And, of course, that'll change after the bye week. You know, we'll be getting Hunt. And I think
it's we're getting back week 9, is my understanding. Assuming I haven't heard a medical update on him. I'm assuming he's going to be ready to go week 9.
State games, that's right.
Yeah, week 9 would be the Denver game, I believe. So, but my thing, and I've been calling for this the whole season, Nick Chubb, what are we saving him for? Okay, we don't need to watch his number of carries. And I understand you don't want him to get hurt. You don't want him to be overused in a game to where he's shot in the game,
right.
But give the man more carries. They have Kareem Hunt coming back after one more game. Okay? Then you've got a guy who's more than capable alongside of Nick Chubb for the whole second half of the season. Nick
Right.
Chubb should have been carrying this team the first half of the season. He should have been getting 25 carries every single game, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and you look at the stat sheet, and it's 37 attempts for Baker Mayfield, and we led from 2 minutes in to 3 minutes left. So, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Why we have 24 total carries and 37 passes, and we were in the lead almost the entire game.
Yeah, you that's know? A great point. That's a great point.
I think it's frustrating to everybody. I Twitter watch when I'm watching games, or you know, when game time is going on, and I see it. You know, I see people give Chubb the ball. Why isn't Chubb? I see people who aren't Browns fans on my timeline. Why don't the Browns give the ball to Chubb? And we talked about how it's a theme dating all the way back to the Rams game when we have first and goal on separate occasions and we don't give Nick Chubb the ball once. You know, and I can't answer your question, Rod. Yeah. I can't answer your question why they aren't running him there. What are they sending him for?
I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens week 9. I still think Nick Chubb should be getting a ton of carries when Kareem Hunt gets back. I think they need to. I think we need to see both of those guys out there in a lot of the time because of their ability to catch the ball out of the backfield.
Yeah,
both of them. I mean, why wouldn't you want both of those guys on the field for probably half of your offensive plays?
Well, and they should be using them the way that a lot of us said we should be using Duke Johnson when we had him too. You know, we just didn't put him on the field.
You know? Right, except Kareem Hunt is
yeah.
Johnson on steroids.
Yeah, you got Duke Johnson times five. So
yeah, no doubt. But in this game, OBJ has 100 yards, so 101 yards, 6 receptions. So he kind of breaks out of that 2 catch thing that had been plaguing him for the last 2 weeks. So he's probably a little bit happier about that. Not that he's happy about a loss, but at least he was getting open making a difference. The tight end situation, Ricky Seals-Jones, 3 catches, 47 yards and a touchdown. I don't know if it was the first play of the game. It was one of the first plays of the game. There's a pass to the tight end, and I'm thinking, who is that? Pharaoh Brown. I'm thinking, why is Pharaoh Brown out there? No offense to the guy, but we got Ricky Seals-Jones, who has looked great every time he's played. He's been on the team for, I'm guessing here, but what, 3-4 weeks now?
Yeah.
I'm thinking he probably knows the playbook pretty well. He should be playing more. Play him and, I don't know. I haven't looked at the stats to compare Pharaoh Brown to Demetrius Harris. I would like to think that Demetrius Harris could be making more of a difference than what he is, but
We haven't seen a lot of Harris on the field, honestly. I think Pharaoh Brown is he's more of a blocking tight end. I think that's more why we use him. Like, he may have been in a package when we were.
My understanding is that Ricky Seals-Jones is one heck of a blocker too, though.
Is he? All right. Yeah. See, I don't know a whole lot. I know that Seals-Jones has been a huge bright side, you know, an unexpected, you know, kind of spark plug on the offense. You know, we lost Njoku, and it was like, oh, you know, we got some tight ends, but you know, they going to be?
That's probably the case with the offensive line, the way it's been performing. Pharaoh Brown's probably out there because he's the next best blocker.
Yeah.
So that's got to be the case.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, if you want to go from a depth chart standpoint, I've got to imagine that Seals-Jones would be our number one tight end right now. I mean,
He would have to be. The guy's done everything they've asked him to do. He's looked really good.
Yeah. And I like all of our tight ends. I do think that, you know, Njoku's he's a different type of tight end. You know, he's a guy who's going to make wide receiver plays at tight end, but he's not going to be the greatest blocker, you know. And then we have, you know, Demetrius Harris, who's a worker. You know, he's a guy that, you know, didn't get drafted, that Dorsey knows from when his time at the Chiefs and brought him in here, you know, to give him a chance, and he worked hard. And, you know, I don't know. I just, it's some of the packages we run, I question what the coaches are really trying to achieve, you know, when it goes to, on what,
you know. No, I agree with you. Yeah.
Sometimes we look kind of aimless, and I'm not sure, you know, if we have much of an identity. And I think a lot of people share that sentiment. And going into the bye week and basically the home stretch of the season, we need to figure out the identity of this team. And, you know, if it doesn't start with Nick Chubb, then I don't know how well the second half's going to go for us.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. Miles Garrett picks up 2 more sacks. He's got 9 sacks through 6 games. So, if you prorate that out, I believe that would work out to about 24 sacks on the season, which that's probably an NFL record, is it not? Or pretty close to it. It's definitely way. I mean, the team record, I think, is what? I've lost my train of thought now. 13 or 15?
I think it's 14 and a half or something like that. 14, okay. It doesn't seem like it stands a chance this year, honestly.
No, I really thought he was going to get it last year. This year with the guys around him, you know, and sure, the numbers aren't piling up for Vernon and some of these other guys, but their presence is giving Miles a shot to get in there and do what he does, because he's not getting double and triple teamed.
Right. And I see a lot of hate, especially for Vernon, because, you know, people, you know how Browns fans are. I mean, we're very, very passionate, and we have a short fuse when it comes to, you know, getting upset about things. But Vernon graded out as one of the highest defensive linemen this week in the NFL, you know. And
it's not just about sacks. People have to understand that there's more to it than sacks. There's you know, there's pressure. There's a lot of other things they're doing. Yeah. So
defensive tackle is definitely not a glamour position in football. You know, you're not going to pile up those great stats, but man, if you don't have some big beef eaters up front, it'll show up for the other team's stats.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it was a tough game. The last thing I want to talk about with that game was the officiating. And you know, I have a hard time. I complain about the officiating, okay? I just do. I know I do it, and sometimes I'm probably wrong. I probably see things from a Browns perspective sometime. Oh, that wasn't a holding. There was no holding there, and it was probably borderline. It could have been called holding.
Yeah.
Okay, there were just some awful calls. That stretch where there were the 3 penalties in a row on the Browns.
Yeah.
It was garbage. And I didn't see the one. I don't think they showed a replay of the. I can't even remember what the penalty was, but the penalty on the offensive lineman, I think. So I didn't see that one. But the Jarvis Landry call was terrible.
That's one of the worst calls of that particular infraction that I've seen.
Yeah, and the Browns are, at that point, I believe they were trying to drive down and take a lead in the game.
Yeah.
Right. So, and they just keep getting set back, and it just seemed like the officials shouldn't have been calling any of that stuff. The Browns end up with 9 penalties in the game for 83 yards. Seattle, I don't have their penalty count, but they had 65 yards. Who wants to watch a game with 150 yards of penalties?
Nobody.
You can't
Yeah,
tell
Seattle.
me.
Yeah,
Wait,
Seattle
we
had
don't.
10, 10
10?
penalties. Seattle, yeah.
10 for 65, so 19 penalties. These officials want to be the star of the dang show. We don't want to watch these guys be the star.
Well, you know,
Okay.
it's like they say about offensive linemen. If you never hear the name called, then they're probably doing a good job, right? You know, if you're an
Right.
official and people don't notice you on the field, then you're probably doing your job right. It's just,
Yeah.
and it's league wide. I mean, the Browns have gotten the short end of the stick for at least the last 3 years. I'd say that it's been pretty bad. We lost a couple games last year because of it too.
Definitely.
The Raiders game,
The
I
Raiders game
right
was
off the
a
bat.
directly because of officiating. That was a loss because of them. Yeah.
And you know, that's this year. I mean, it's everywhere. Did you watch Monday Night Football? I mean, we're just.
I didn't I watched some of it. I didn't
Hands
see
to the
the
face.
issues at the end though. I did not see
Yeah,
that. But I heard about it.
it was a hand on the shoulder pad, and they threw a flag, which ended the game. I mean, it ended the game. It was the wrong call, and it ended the game. And the announcers are talking about it, and they're like, even the announcers are saying, why didn't they didn't have a conference? The one guy threw the flag, he called it, they accepted it, and that was it. You know, it was like they didn't have a discussion about it. And
Yep.
it was
I heard that player's never been called for that penalty in his entire career.
yeah, and a penalty almost similar, almost exactly the same, was called earlier in the game incorrectly too. And it's just, you know, and then you watch Clay Matthews Jr. every week. I swear he's roughing a passer. You know, he's on the bench roughing the passer sometimes. And he looks at the quarterback and he gets a flag thrown. Oh, and that's been a running theme for the last couple of years. So,
Yeah,
you
it really seems like they have an agenda with some teams, or just some crews have an agenda. And it's just, I was talking with some people at work today, and I think the officials had an agenda with the Cincinnati Bengals when the Bengals had Burfict and Pac-Man Jones on their team. They were flagging them like crazy for anything. And now those guys are gone, so they're not getting those flags. I almost feel like they have an agenda against the Browns. Maybe it's because of all the attention the Browns have gotten. I don't know. Of course, it seems like it goes back further than that. Maybe they just don't like Cleveland.
I
I don't
don't know.
know, but
Maybe it's Bottlegate fallout. There's still officials everywhere just still mad about
well,
it.
I don't know. To me, it almost seems like you have to be. It's almost like in baseball, you have to be a good hitter to get the call. In football, you have to be a good team to get the call on the penalties. And why? It should just be a level playing field,
Yeah,
no
that's
matter
what.
what.
100%. You just want it to be fair. You know, it's,
That's all I want.
yeah. You know, the officials ruling for one side or the other is like, it gives an unfair advantage. I mean, it changes games. It wins and loses games. It has this year, and that's awful. That's awful. And you know, I have always been a, you know, don't put yourself in a position where penalties lose you a game, you know, or the officiating can
Right.
a game. And I've always said, you know, everybody gets penalties called on them, but I mean, just lately it's been too much. It's been
Yeah.
it
It
you can't ignore it.
turned into the theme of the NFL this past weekend.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be it. There are too many great players, too much good foot, there's too much good football going on. And we could talk about the Browns Seahawks game. Maybe without those penalties, maybe the Browns go down and score, maybe they win. Okay, I'm not going to say they deserve to win that game. They turned the ball over four times. They
Yeah.
had some balls bounce off their hands up into the air that turned into picks, and some stuff that was just awful, some sloppy things, some bad play calling. So I'm not going to sit here and say they deserve to win that game, but they deserve to have plays, they deserve to have penalties called the same way against them as they are against any other team. That's it.
Yeah, I don't think that's asking much. You know, I don't think asking anybody to do anything other than their job. You know, you expect the athletes to go out and execute, we expect the referees to go out and execute, and they're not. They're not holding up their end of the bargain.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead.
I honestly blanked on what I was going to say, but anyway, you know, it's been disappointing. And I, like I said, I don't think it's just the Browns, but, I was telling my buddies the other day, I was like, you know, the Browns, the first game against Tennessee, when you have that many penalties and they've shown themselves to be a team that's going to commit penalties, you know, and I don't mind the extra penalties where they're being aggressive and you get a penalty for playing a little too hard. You know, those are going to happen and those are penalties that you can live with, you know, but stupid lining up wrong and, you know, holding and stuff like that, or bad blocks negating big gains. Those are killers. And we shoot ourselves in the foot so often with those, but it seems like even when we're not committing penalties, flags are still coming out. And it's like we're either committing penalties or we're getting flags anyway. It's frustrating. It's frustrating for me. It's frustrating for our fan base. And you know, there's nothing we can do about it. We can't fix it.
I agree. But you know, you brought up the Titans. Let's take a look at the schedule real quick. Just, you know, kind of where the Browns have been, what they've done so far, and what lies ahead. Because, yeah, it's been a little while since we've talked about it on this podcast, but I think most everybody knows the beginning part of the schedule is or was tough. It was going to be tough. It was going to be hard to come out of this with an excellent record. And the Browns aren't through it yet, but they're getting there. They're getting close to the part of the schedule where we like to think that they can put some wins together.
Yeah.
So, of course, they start out with that horrible game against the Titans God only knows what happened there, but it just explosion. Seemed like they weren't ready. It was, yeah, just nothing went right. They end up with, like, what, 11 penalties in that game, I think, and just couldn't do anything. They get beat by 30 points in that game. And then they have the game against the Jets, and they did pretty much, they just had their way with the Jets 23-3. And that was a Monday night game.
Yep.
So, you know, so you're thinking, all right. Yeah, they've got it going. And then they play the Rams. Then they played with the Rams that whole game. Had a chance to tie the game at the end with a fourth and goal at the 5, and they end up not making it, so they lose 20-13. And then they go to Baltimore and really kick the crap out of the Ravens, 40-25, but the Ravens score a garbage time touchdown at the end there, so it's not even as close as it sounded, you know, with that. And then we had the 49ers game, which we don't want to talk about. Just the thing is, the 49ers going into that game, it's like, the 49ers haven't played anybody. They beat Pittsburgh and Cincinnati and I can't remember who else, you know, that they're not that great. Mm-hmm. Well, I think they just beat up on the Rams this weekend too, didn't they? So, you know, they're looking a little bit better.
Their defense is something else.
Their defense is a real thing.
That is a tough defense.
Yeah, that's a pretty darn good defense. So, and then we just talked about the Seahawks game. So that's where the Browns are sitting at 2-4 with the bye coming up. And then the Browns head to Foxborough to play the Patriots. You know, when we previewed this back before the season started, you know, I actually predicted a win in Foxborough coming off the bye, because the Patriots play this coming Monday in New York. So I'm thinking, well, a short week for the Patriots, maybe the Browns can surprise them. I think that's kind of a dream with the way the Browns have been playing right now. I think the Browns have the talent to be able to do something like that, but are they going to be able to put that together? It's probably completely unrealistic. And the Patriots have been on a roll already. Yeah. You know, and it's not normal for them to be rolling like they are this early in the season.
Well, their defenses. Talk about another defense that is for real. That is another very, very good defense.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously that's going to be a very tough game. And then it's kind of to where you're into a couple games that we don't really know what to expect, because Browns go out to Denver, yeah, and then they come high. They come home for the Bills. So depends who you ask. Okay, Broncos, I think, have won their last two games, right?
They've been turning it around. They looked hapless at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, they looked horrible. So that looked like an easy game a few weeks ago, but now, you know, who knows?
I don't know what's outside of the Dolphins if there's an easy game in the NFL anymore.
Well, that's true. Well, nothing's easy. There's nothing. None of it's really easy. The Bills have an excellent defense too. So you can't look past them. But you'd like to think that the Browns can do something there when Buffalo comes to town. And then the Browns, they host Pittsburgh. That's a Thursday night game. And the Browns have to take care of business at home on a Thursday night. Yeah. And then they play the Dolphins, and then they go to Pittsburgh. And I believe that's just a Sunday game.
Yeah, that's Sunday afternoon.
Sunday.
Or a 4:25 game.
Yeah, so I think the Steelers are coming off playing the Rams. But they just play the Rams like at 4:25 the week before there. So, the Steelers, those two games looked like easy wins with them on their third string quarterback, but they seem to have found something here lately. So
he's been playing well. He has.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But fortunately, the Browns will then play the Bengals, then the Cardinals, and then they get to host the Ravens, and they finish at the Bengals. So, again, you can't guarantee any of those victories, but you can't get a schedule that's a whole lot easier than that.
Yeah.
And obviously, the Ravens, hosting the Ravens isn't a guaranteed win. But
the Cardinals have actually looked pretty good.
Yeah, the Cardinals are decent, you know, but playing Bengals two out of the last 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
You know, if you're gonna win at all, you better be able to beat those teams. And if you went into Baltimore and won, you better be able to defend your turf. So, like I've said many times, the schedule changes as you flow through the season. The schedule looks different all the time. And it looks a little bit different now than it did back at the beginning of the season.
Right.
But you have to like the Browns' chances if they can. I mean, for some wins, if they can get, especially if they can do some things against the Broncos and the Bills heading into the remainder of the season. So
yeah.
We'll see how that goes. And you informed me. I really haven't been paying much attention today, but I guess there were a couple of trades today. Jalen Ramsey going to the Rams in a big move that kind of shakes things up a bit out there in the NFC West. And then the Browns trade Austin Corbett also to the Rams for a fifth rounder. So John Dorsey swallowing his pride there. But that's real tough to see. The guy really never got a shot here, so it must just be a case of just feeling like he just didn't have it on the professional level to play any of the positions that they wanted him to play. But you brought up a great point that maybe they're freeing up a spot to make a run at Trent Williams of the Redskins here, which is really something that could really help this team.
Yeah, I mean. You think about the Browns for the last 10 years until, recently when Joe Thomas retired, and, we didn't have to worry about left tackle. We had our guy. That was, the one thing about the Browns is, Joe Thomas was going to be there, and then when he retired, we How do you fill those shoes? You know,
still trying. Yeah.
How do you fill the shoes with a right-handed quarterback and a guy, you know, a first ballot Hall of Famer, gone from blocking his blind side?
You can't replace him. That's the thing. You're just trying to find somebody good, just good to, you know, so your quarterback doesn't get killed, and you know, just somebody to help anchor that line. It would be huge if they could add Trent Williams, especially if he could stay healthy and you know, especially for a stretch run. I mean, even with the loss of the Browns, if the Browns are sitting 2-5 after the visit to New England, you still have to like their chances for a playoff spot. And by playoff spot, I mean winning the North, because there's not going to be a wild card team coming out of the North, guys. There's just not.
No, probably not.
But the Ravens' schedule is tough from here on out. They face a lot of teams that the Browns have already faced.
Yeah, they're going down our path.
they've got what, the Seahawks and Rams and some of these other teams coming up the next few weeks.
They have
so
49ers as well.
49ers, yeah. They've got a rough stretch coming up too. So I think it may be a pretty low win total that wins the North at this point, unless somebody really puts a stretch together, you know, with a bunch of wins. But it's very possible 8 or 9 wins could win this division.
Well, I want to be ever the optimist. So what I'm gonna say is, when I looked at the schedule at the beginning of the year, and maybe it was a little bit with my brown tinted goggles on, but I saw us as a 10-11 win team. And I went game by game, and I think right now, of course, I got the Tennessee game wrong.
I think everybody did.
Yeah, I absolutely thought that was a sure win, you know, but I actually thought we were going to lose at Baltimore. I thought we were going to take the L on the road at Baltimore against a good team. So, you know, those kind of swapped each other out. I expected us to win against the Jets. I knew the Rams was probably going to be a loss. Honestly, I didn't think the 49ers were going to be that good this year. So right now I'm, you know, I think Seattle had the team to beat us. And so I figured maybe a win at San Francisco and we're looking at a 3-3 win team right now going into the bye week.
Right.
So we're not, you know, as far as I have it, we're one game off, right? Off of where I expected us to be as a 10. So we pick up a, you know, say we go into the bye week and we come up with a great game plan. You know, we really figure out what we can go after New England on, and we, you know, pull out an upset. You know, that's tough. That would be a huge upset.
But it would be huge at this point. Yeah.
You do something like that, and then all of a sudden we're looking at a 10-11 win team again. And you know, I think every game after that's winnable. You know, they're not going to be easy, but I think this is a team that if they can just stop shooting themselves in the foot, turning the ball over, penalties, you know, stuff like that, I think that this is a team that can go ahead and run off a big streak of wins. You know, like you said, if we beat Baltimore, you know, in Baltimore, who's to say we can't beat them at home? You know, and Pittsburgh, honestly, the two games that I was scared of us losing were Pittsburgh on the road and Baltimore on the road, and we already won one of them. So, hey, you know, you run through the AFC North and win all your games, you're going to the playoffs. You know, and we've just got to hope that we figure out what direction we want this offense to be going by the time, you know, the playoffs come around, and then anything can happen.
That's right. Yeah. You just never know. Yeah, I mean, the playoffs are so much about, you know, just about the hot team. So in the NFL, I mean, let's face it, a lot of it's about home field advantage too. But if you're hot at the right time in the NFL, things can happen. So,
for sure.
So you just never know. You just never know. Being healthy and being hot can definitely help. So
Yeah, I saw the undefeated New England Patriots losing the Super Bowl to the wild card Giants. So, you know, I will never assume anything, you know, is impossible.
That's right. You just never know.
All you got to do is get your foot in the door and man, you can make some magic.
Yeah, I mean, the season's still relatively young, so.
It is. And if you want to look at our division, we're 1-0 in our division. So, you know, when you're really down on a 2-4 team at this point in the season, you can say, hey, we haven't lost anything in the division yet. So.
That's right. Well, hey, Matt, I think we're going to wrap things up here. We're kind of up against it, and
right.
I want to thank you for joining me for this episode. And why don't you give your Twitter handle so everybody can give you a follow?
All right, my Twitter handle is at MattNorris10. That's MattNorris10, and that's it. My handle is Norris Deluxe. So any Browns fans out there that want to follow, I follow back. And as long as you don't become a huge jerk on your timeline and start fights with me, you know, I'll continue to follow. So
basic Twitter rules apply.
Yeah. The more fans, the merrier. You know, I'm always up for talking football or whatever. So
that's right.
I appreciate you having me on here, Rod. And, I look forward to listening to your podcast going forward.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Now, you guys can follow me at CLE Rod B. And if you have questions or ideas for the show, you can email me at rod.bluhm, B-L-U-H-M, @gmail.com. And you can find us on various things out there, including iTunes and Spotify. And follow us on The Grueling Truth at gruelingtruth.com. And that's going to do it for us. And for the Browns Blitz, we will catch you next time.
Go Browns.